How are you?
So today, dear listener, if you're listening to this on the release day, then tomorrow is my first day as a firefighter.
Is it really?
Yes, April 7th. I'm supposed to show up to the station.
Oh!
For 3 days of orientation.
Time's fake. We're releasing this a week from now. It's like, what?
Word?
I haven't even driven you to your uniform fitting yet.
So, yeah, I got a conditional offer of employment. I had to attend a psych eval today. Ooh. Folks, if you've never taken the MMPI, it's weird as hell.
Bananas. I think I had to take that for Psych 101.
It's so weird. It's questions about, like, so the test questions you on a bunch of different axes, like psychopathy and, like...
Okay, time out, though. Sorry to interrupt you. Wouldn't a psychopath just lie?
I don't know.
Like, how would you catch a psychopath being a psychopath if the definition of a psychopath is you can just, like, blend into society?
I think you're thinking of a sociopath. Because it asks questions like, true, false, like, I believe people are stealing my thoughts. True, false, I see animals and things that other people don't see. So it's like trying to determine, I guess, if you're schizophrenic?
Again, though.
Right, you would
there's
think...
still some knowledge of what the other person probably wants to hear.
Yeah, I think the way they try to combat it is one with like asking you the same question or similar questions a bunch of times in different ways. Mm-hmm. And two, there are a lot of questions peppered in there that they would expect you to lie on if you're trying to be obfuscatory, essentially. So like true, false, like, I don't know, it's not exactly this, but like, I have never told a lie, or like... Right, there are some that aren't as obvious. Like, one of them was, like, true, false, there are people that I dislike so much that, like, when I see them catching it, I am, like, secretly glad. And I was like, don't we all? Is that one of the ones that you're supposed to, that's going to catch you out if you're, like, trying to lie and sound like you're more virtuous or less evil or whatever they're looking for than you really are? I don't know. But there's questions about, like, true, false, I love my father, I love my mother, my sex life is satisfying. One of them was basically like, true or false, I do weird sex stuff.
Okay, but what is weird, really?
That's what I wanted to know.
I feel like weird sex stuff is in the eye of the
weird sex haver?
Yeah.
Some of them were like, if I were a reporter, I would like to report on sports. If I were an artist, I would like to draw flowers. Like, I just don't know what they
want.
But
what if I don't want to be an artist? What do I answer to that?
Yeah, it's the guy who administered it was basically like, is it more true or more false? And I was like,
yeah, that doesn't help me.
Yeah. There was one, hang on, I'm going to look it up. Marvin, you can cut out the part where I'm looking it up. There's this one weird question.
Oh boy.
Oh,
how
I think
weird
I talked.
Was it?
I think I talked about it in the group chat. I copied and pasted it. There's this website called like antipolygraph.org that disseminates information about like how polygraphs and the MMPI and stuff like this are bullshit. It's funny because it's the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, and I went to the University of Minnesota. It still says copyright 1989, like Regents of the University of Minnesota at the bottom of the test, and like the one psych PhD that I know is a U of M psych PhD, and he thinks that these are basically all bullshit. So I think that is very funny. anyway, the weird questions that I was thinking of were, oh yeah, so a couple of these I just couldn't parse. Quote, I have met problems so full of possibilities that I have been unable to make up my mind about them. What does that mean? And, quote, it makes me uncomfortable to pull a stunt at a party, even when others are doing the same sort of things.
What is a stunt?
Really? What is a stunt? What kind of party are we at? Are we at a sex party and I'm getting on a big swing? Are we at a normal party and I'm doing a keg stand? Are we at a college party and I'm hazing a freshman? Am I going skinny dipping in public in my friend's pool?
Is it an Olympic theme party and I'm doing some sort of Olympic stunt?
Are we just wearing funny hats?
Like, am I on a unicycle? Am I juggling?
Are my tits out? What's happening?
Am I juggling whilst my tits are out?
I don't know what this means. I don't know. So, yeah, that's the MMPI. And then I had to take this other one.
I'm still laughing because I'm imagining myself juggling, like, tits out. Like,
right? I'm trying to decide, would I answer this question differently if I were juggling with or without my tits out? And the other one was, like, a firefighter-specific one. And there were a bunch of, like, questions about, like, what kind of firefighting work you want to do. And I'm like, I don't know, dude. Or, like, I feel like I would be suited. I'm like, I'm not suited to jack shit right now. That's why you're training me. I don't know how to answer these questions. Anywho, so I had my psych eval. Thursday, I have my uniform fitting. And Wednesday, April 7th, I am supposed to start as a firefighter. So if you're listening to this,
woo-woo!
Say a prayer, cross your fingers, whatever you got. Thanks. I'm shitting bricks. Why did I think I could do this? I don't know.
Because you can do it.
It sounded cool, and it felt good to have a direction, and I was sure about it. Now I'm like, why was I sure about that? That bold of me to assume. Anywho, so that's what's new in my life. And today we're talking about something completely unrelated. So thanks.
Thank you for listening to me go on for 7 minutes about my life.
About my existential crisis.
Here's an update. I am on spring break, so all I've been doing is rewatching Parks and Recreation and sitting on my couch. Okay, let's do it. Let's go. That's it. That's all you need to know.
Can we talk real quick about recently I got food poisoning and I watched that clip of Parks and Rec when they get food
with
poisoning?
With the flu episode?
No, I think they get food poisoning from the empanadas because Tom didn't eat the empanadas.
Oh, yeah.
And
so
there was an episode
like that. Yeah, it's so good.
Because Nick Offerman, what the fuck is his character? Fucking Ron Swanson.
Come on.
He's like, he just comes in and he deadpans. I did not sleep for 1 second last night and I cracked the bottom of the toilet bowl. And Rob Lowe goes, oh no, don't say that. And they're like trying to call Tom. And like, I forget, one of them is like, Ron Swanson is like, I voided more than that man's body weight last night. He may have simply disappeared. And the guy who plays Ben, like, I think Nick Offerman just like backhands the phone off the desk because none of them want to like bend over and to like reach the phone. And the guy who plays Ben is like slithering along the floor and he knocks the handset off the cradle like with his nose and is like dialing with his face so he can continue to lie on the floor clutching his midriff while he calls Tom. And then Tom strides in and he's just fine because he didn't eat the poisoned empanadas or whatever. So fucking good. That is my favorite Parks and Rec clip of all time.
That is a good clip.
That was the intro. Oh.
She just pointed at me like, any additional thoughts about Parks and Rec? And I'm like, yeah, it was great. It was like I was watching the episode. It was just so detailed how you regaled the clip to me. Anyway, let's do it.
And I'm Ellie.
And this is the Queers for Fears podcast. The podcast where two queer women discuss things that scare them about the world, whether they're based in reality or the paranormal. And today's episode is a movie-sode. So we'll be discussing what scares us about the movie The Invisible Man, and I will be talking about The Invisible Boy, a real-life possession of sorts. There you go. There's your teaser for my part of this episode.
Disclosure, I have not read the H.G. Wells Invisible Man. My understanding is it's like, basically this is some kind of mishap that happens to the dude and he has to go about in bandages and like figure out how to live life being invisible.
I feel like he drinks a... No, that's Jekyll and Hyde.
I was like,
doesn't
Wonderland.
He drink a potion and become invisible? And I was like, wait. Wait.
I really liked the Invisible Man movie with Elizabeth Moss, though.
Hang on, before you dive in.
Yes.
Can I go over the Patreon stuff really quick?
Because yes.
This is going to be like right after we change
all our shit.
I need to stop drinking things that make me burp while I record on this podcast. Good grief. I'm never going to eat on mic again. So thank you for fixing that quality of mine. Okay, so I just want to welcome our newest Patreon supporter, Night Classy. If you haven't checked out their podcast, please make sure you follow them on Instagram at Night Classy and listen to them wherever you get your podcasts. They're great. They're fun.
If you're a Patreon, you've already heard our crossover episode with them.
You have. Yeah.
A Patronodon.
If you're a Patronodon, if you will. Okay, Ali, so I have set a goal that we will have 15 patrons by my summer vacation. So that starts June 25th of this year.
Okay.
That's,
how many do we have right now? Like,
seven.
Six. Hey, seven.
We have seven. Wait, do we have eight? No, we have seven. We have seven? I was very prepared for this, can you tell?
We have somewhere in the neighborhood of seven.
We have seven or eight.
We have somewhere in the neighborhood of double that to make Abby's goal.
And you heard how she said, okay, folks, so prove Ellie wrong, because she thinks I'm crazy, because she was like, okay, sure, Jan. And I'm like, no, they'll do it. They will do it. We love creating free content for all of you, but it does cost us money to pay our lovely editor, Marvin, to get our podcast out there. We would like to be able to pay Marvin to also edit our Patreon episodes. We'd love to start creating merch, maybe pay for a website domain. All these things would be really cool. So we need your support. And at 20 Patreon supporters, Patronodons, if you will, I have decided that I am going to host a giveaway on social media. And, I don't know. Tell your friends to listen to us. There's literally a $1 tier, so, you know, $12 a year, you can help us out.
Get extra episodes.
Exactly. So I've changed it, because originally the $1 tier was just like, we say thank you, we send you a sticker, that's it. But I did go through and kind of change these tiers so that you feel like you're getting your hard-earned cash bucks worth. Cash bucks? Yep, that's a thing.
Cash money buck dollars.
Well, that's going to be in our canon now. Okay, so at the $1 tier, it's called the Queerdo. Like weirdo, but queers, get it?
It was good. Get it. They're all punny. It's fine.
It's fine. She hates it. I love it. It's
but whatever. I don't come up with the Patreon stuff, so I let her drive.
She's like, whatever. So at the $1 tier, you support us for $1 a month, and you get one bonus episode every month, and you get a sweet QFF sticker. The next level is called Here for the Fears. It's our $3 tier, which gives you two bonus episodes every month, a sticker, a shout-out on the show, and access to our Discord channel, where you can use it to talk to us directly if you want. You can send memes, you can send Animal Crossing gifts, whatever you want to do. At this level, we will also create a spooky location episode in which we will discuss your city, your state, your country, whatever you want to give us. We'll discuss their spooky history or locations on our Patreon shows. So we just did one for Tennessee for Night Classy, and they seem to really like it. And I forgot that one of the hosts of Night Classy, because we talked about a haunted bar, Ernestine and Hazel's. And Kat was like, yeah, my cat is named Ernestine.
And my cat is named Hazel.
Oh my god! Kat, did you hear that?
Oh, they should open a bar together.
Meant to be. Oh my god. A cat cafe! Anyway. There's also the next level is called our Loud and Queer tier, and it is the $5 tier. It comes with everything I've just mentioned, plus a monthly bonus video, brand new, that we're going to start doing.
Ellie does not look thrilled. Me put on makeup. All right.
Ellie does not look thrilled. I won't put on makeup. I'm just going to wear my glasses and call it a day. That way you can't see, like, they conceal my under eyes. You see?
Yeah, that's magic.
That's a pro tip of being on Zoom for a whole year. the first video I think we're going to do is like the newlywed game show. So we're going to answer questions about each other and see if we get them right, like if we match.
Okay, that sounds fun.
I'm sure most of you have seen the newlywed game show, but we're going to have to call it something else because we're not newlyweds. Like, we're gay, but not for each other.
The oldly friends.
I feel like... game show. The friends forever and ever show. Yeah, so we're gonna do fun videos like that. We're gonna maybe try some new cocktails. We're gonna do silly internet challenges. I don't know. I think I'm gonna whoop her ass at Mario Kart on one of them.
It depends.
Maybe give you a tour of our Animal Crossing Islands is one of them. Oh, now she's excited.
Okay. I just redid my Animal Crossing Island.
She did. Bitching. It's very cute. Finally, our $10 tier, aka the true crime bruff tier. Oh my god, I love it so much. Okay, I have a vision. You know what? I can't. I gotta stay. Stay on the course. I will explain it later. So, the $10 tier includes everything that we already chatted about, plus a discount on future merch that we're working on creating as we speak. Ad-free episodes. You'll get a personalized thank you from us. And at this level, super special, you also get to submit an episode topic for us to discuss on a regular episode of Queers for Fears.
Hey.
So if you have something that you really want us to talk about, $10 Patreon. It only costs $10. We're quite cheap to buy. And so if any of these perks sound interesting to you, make sure that you check us out on patreon.com/queersforfearspodcast. Link is also in the show notes. Okay, so here's my vision. I'm going to sound so weird. I promise I am almost as sober as a nun. Like, sober as a not-so-great nun right now.
Probably sober as a medieval nun, because didn't they all drink beer instead of water because the water was nasty in ye olde times?
That is true. I am as sober as a medieval nun. okay, you know the story Billy Goats Gruff?
Yes.
She's like, where is this going?
I haven't thought about this in a million years. So, like, there's a bridge, right?
Yes. Goats trying to cross, and there's a troll that's like, right. Don't cross, like, my bridge.
Is the troll in this story?
Yes. And you say true crime bruff. So I'm thinking we can make a sticker that's like a goat with, like, some sort of detective hat on it. With the words. I've killed my co-host.
Some sort of true crime bruff underneath. Some sort of detective head. It's going to be a motherfucking deer stalker. We're going full Arthur Conan fuckboy Doyle.
Yes, with like a corncob pipe.
That's so weird. And maybe like a mock joke goat art.
If any of our listeners can draw, oh my god. I will even pay you for this artwork, okay? If you can give me a true crime Billy Goats bruff.
Billy Goats crime bruff. She's cracked herself pretty fuck up.
Everyone is turning this off right now. They're like, I am not high enough. I am not.
So, spoilers ahead for The Invisible Man, obviously. Yeah.
It came out in 2020. It is on a streaming service, if you would like to watch it.
It's really good. It, content warning ahead for abuse and gaslighting. Oh, just watching the trailer again, like, made me so emotional and gave me chills. So, the premise is that Elizabeth Moss is the girlfriend of this guy. I don't even remember the guy's name.
Adrian Griffin, played by Hottie McHotHot Oliver Jackson Cohen from Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, thank you.
Who is making it so much harder for me to love him because he keeps playing abusive
creeps.
Dicks.
Yeah.
Except so, Luke in season one of Haunting of Hill House, because we love Luke. We love him to pieces. Anyway.
So Elizabeth Moss plays the girlfriend.
Cecilia,
thank you. Of essentially this, he's clearly supposed to be, let's be honest.
I just got it, sorry.
What?
Because the original book, The Invisible Man, the main character is Holly Griffin, and it's Adrian Griffin.
Oh. Yeah. Yes, that's true. So Cecilia is the girlfriend of this Adrian Griffin fellow, and he's essentially, let's be real, an Elon Musk type.
Mm.
Like, he's a super rich dude. He is, like, at the cutting edge of, he's at the forefront of these, like, really cutting edge lucrative technologies.
Their house? Oh my god.
Yeah, in Adrian Griffin's case, it's optics.
I don't even know what optics are. I thought optics were just glasses. Like, wow, this guy can see better? Okay. Weird flex.
And so the movie opens with her having dosed him with her diazepam. Which I believe is an anti-anxiety medication. Yeah. And she has dosed him with her diazepam, and she is making her escape from the house. And it is so stressful. Like, you know, based on what happens, like, if you, like, the trailer makes it clear what's going to happen. You know, based on having seen the trailer and, like, having seen the hype for this movie, you know that she's going to make it out of the house. But, like, the sequence where she is, like, she's, you know, like, getting her bag packed, you know, she's dosing with the diazepam. She, like, the at the last second, she managed, the dog comes upon her, and she takes manages to take the shock collar off the dog, because this guy has a shock collar on his dog. But then the dog, like, bumps into a parked car and sets off the alarm.
No,
and
she does when she finally gets the collar off.
That's right. Oh, yeah. And she sets off the car alarm. Yeah. In getting the shock collar off the dog. And the whole time she's watching him through this, like, sort of, you know, nest or whatever type system where they have cameras all over the house because they're rich as hell. And so she's watching him, making sure he's sleeping. She, like, grabs a kitchen knife and she runs out the gate and through the woods outside their house and jumps in the passenger seat of her sister's car. And her sister's name is Emily. And she jumps in the passenger seat of Emily's car, and she's, and Emily's like, what the fuck? Like, why did you call me out here at this weird hour of the night? What's going on? And Cecilia's like, go, go, go. And, like, before they can peel off, Adrian punches in the passenger side window and starts screaming at her and trying to pull her out the passenger side window of the car.
Yeah. Terrifying.
And they peel out. So Emily takes Cecilia to the house of a friend, James,
played by Aldous Hodge.
Yes, and
who's in fucking Straight Outta Compton? He's MC Ren and a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, so she takes Cecilia to James's house.
Who's a police officer?
Yeah, James is a cop. He lives there with his daughter Sydney, played by Storm Reid. And he's obviously a longtime friend of theirs, and probably the one person who Cecilia would trust to keep her safe. But she's still, like, she is still extremely rattled. Like, there's this, like, funny slash heartbreaking scene where he, like, challenges her to go outside to the mailbox. He's like, look, you've been hiding. This guy is not coming after you. I'm going to keep you safe. I want you to go out and get the mail and come back. Like, just try that. And then, of course, a jogger comes by and she's like, oh my God, Jesus fucking Christ.
And yeah, like a jogger with a hoodie on and you can't even see their face. So, right? Like, of course she, like, I did not blame her one bit for running back into the fucking house.
No, because she tells, right, it's interesting. It's interesting how the movie puts us in the position of her friends, right? Because abusers isolate you and control you and punish you if you try to let it be known what is going on for you. And so as much as we see, as much as the story is told from Cecilia's point of view, we also kind of see her relationship from the perspective of these people who have been on the outside, not allowed to look in this whole time.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a lot of, there's like almost no flashbacks to their relationship. Like, she just tells Emily and James, like, he controlled everything. You know, he promised me that if I ever tried to leave, he would find me. He would give me a sign and I wouldn't know he was there, which huge foreshadowing for what comes ahead. But basically she's like, he wanted a baby. I knew he would use it to control me. So I started taking birth control on the sly. Like, this big bad news. This guy was controlling my life, controlling what I wore, trying to control my reproductive choices. You know, and none of you knew because, you know, we assume he was also controlling her ability to see her loved ones. And so we're kind of put in the position of James and Emily just hearing about this from her secondhand. And we're put in the position of being like, of sort of that creepy curiosity of like, what are we talking about? Like, what's going to happen? How bad are we talking? And creepy shit starts to happen. Like, she thinks she hears something, like, outside or on the front porch. She goes out onto the front porch, and it's cold outside, and we see her staring. Like, you can just tell. Like, she's listening as hard as she can. She's looking as hard as she can out on this dark, cold front porch, and we see, like, a puff of breath appear in the air next to her. And other creepy shit starts to happen. Like, she's making breakfast, and she goes into the other room for a minute, and the flame on the burner goes up and nearly burns breakfast, and a knife falls off the counter.
Nearly burns? It goes up in flames.
Well, I mean, it nearly burns the kitchen down, but they manage, Sydney manages to salvage it.
Yeah, there's a fire extinguisher under the sink, which comes into play later.
Yeah. And stuff like, in the night, we see that there's, like, a smartphone, like an iPhone, floating in the air, taking pictures of.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah. Oh. Sydney and Cecilia are sharing a bed.
That part freaked me out.
Yeah, and we just see an iPhone floating in the air and the flash going off and this unseen figure taking pictures of them in bed. And he also, like...
He rips the blanket off.
Yeah, he pulls the sheet off of her like a ghost in a horror movie. And, like, she sees his footprints in the mattress. Like, she can tell someone's, like, walking across the bed towards her.
That's, like, the... This Reddit can't sleep that I read about how... A woman feels like she's being watched in her own home, and then, like, one day she's, like, deleting photos, and she sees pictures of herself sleeping that she did not take.
Yes!
Like, it's... Ugh, I hate that.
It's exactly like that.
Hate it. Hate it so much. Very creepy. Did not like it.
I'm sorry, before all this happens, like, between the mailbox thing and the creepy shit starting to happen, what happens is Emily comes to her house and reveals that... Content warning ahead for suicide. She reveals that Adrian has apparently taken his own life. Mm-hmm. And there's, like, photo evidence, like, this guy is dead. He's gone. And Cecilia's like, that's too easy. He would never kill himself. You know, he promised that if I left him, he would always torment me.
Yeah. He's cremated in an urn. When she goes to this big meeting to discuss how his assets are going to be allocated.
Yeah, she's called into the office of Adrian's brother, Tom. Who's his lawyer, obviously also the executor of his estate.
Mm-hmm.
And Adrian has left her $5 million on the condition that she never be found, like, mentally incompetent or, like, commit a crime. Also big foreshadowing. So that's when the creepy stuff starts happening. Because she's like, I don't believe it. Like, I don't believe he would just disappear from my life that easily. Like, he always promised he would find me. He would make it known that he was there. Yeah. And then all this creepy stuff starts happening.
She's also a little confused and taken aback. And even brings up at that first initial meeting, she's like, I don't think he's dead. Like, I just don't.
Yeah.
This doesn't make any sense. Like, he controlled everything. He would never, I mean, we hear people
he would never let it get away from him like this.
Yeah, he was like, she was like, he wouldn't do this. Like, he just wouldn't do any of this. This isn't him.
Yeah.
And his brother is just like, well, he's literally in that box of ashes next to you. So, like, I don't know what to tell you, kid.
It's creepy because he, like, makes a reference to, like, her being, like, physically close to him. And he seems to be referencing the ashes in the urn. But we realize later that's not what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So this creepy stuff starts happening, but she's like, you know, of course, all of the people in her life are like, don't let him haunt you. Like, this is a last day, right? This is like post-traumatic stress. Mm-hmm. Like, he brainwashed you into believing that he had this power to, like, wield unseen forces against you and taunt you forever, but it was just part of his mind games. And that's very compelling. And that's often true. Like, it's hard to shake off, right, when you're, like, programmed by an abuser to believe that they are in control, they are in charge, and they have these extraordinary powers of tormenting you forever. Like, it's hard to deprogram yourself from that when someone's been controlling your life.
Yep.
And so people are telling her, don't buy into it. Don't let him run your life from the grave.
Yep.
But all this creepy shit starts happening. We find out that Cecilia is an architect. She goes for an interview at an architectural firm. Like, this is, you know, her first big foray back into the professional world after essentially being, you know, Adrian's prisoner. And she opens up her portfolio and it's completely empty.
Oh my God.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
And she's like really hitting it off with the guy interviewing her. She's obviously a really talented architect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she opens her portfolio and it's all gone. And she starts to freak out and get dizzy and she passes out in the middle of her interview.
Yeah. She was like, I swear I put these, like, I remember putting my work into this portfolio this morning. I don't know what's going on.
And right.
She passes out.
And it could be, like, a really embarrassing fuck-up where you, like, have to reschedule the interview and pray that they're still interested in you.
Well, like, the guy is even cool about it. He's like, hey, that's fine. Like, just email us your work when you get home.
Yeah.
Like, not a big deal.
Yeah, like, but she...
Let's keep going.
She starts freaking out and passes out, and then she ends up in the hospital, and they tell her that she has high amounts of diazepam in her system. And we saw at the beginning of the movie that she dosed Adrian with it, and then the bottle got blood on it when he shattered the car window, but she, like, dropped it. She dropped it in the road when Emily picked her up.
Yeah, and then he picked it up with his bloody hand from breaking the glass.
That's right. So then she comes home.
I think she put it, like, on top of the car.
Yeah, and then he punches the window, and then the bottle falls off the car as they drive away, and he picks it up. So then...
With his bloody-ass hand, yeah.
Yeah, so when she...
It has, like, a big...
Bloody thumbprint on it. Yeah. So she gets home from the hospital and this bloody thumbprinted bottle of diazepam that she lost is, like, on the bathroom counter at James's house.
Nope. Nope. So nope, nope.
James starts to take this a little bit more seriously, and Cecilia and James go back to the brother, Tom. And Tom reveals that he also was manipulated and controlled by Adrian. And he's like, let me give you, like, a hot fucking tip. Don't let him do this.
Good. Thank you. I hadn't possibly considered that before.
Right? And he, like, reminds her again that he's dead and blah, blah, blah.
I really don't like fucking Tom. Tom,
yeah. He shows her the crime scene photos. He's like, my brother is toast. So Cecilia's like, this is still weird. So she tries to talk to her sister, but Emily won't talk to her because she says that Cecilia sent her a really... She basically is like, well, if I'm so suffocating, like, why are you here? And Cecilia's like, what the fuck are you talking about? She's like, the email you sent. So Cecilia goes home and someone sent Emily a really mean email from Cecilia's account.
It literally says, I hope you died instead of Adrian.
Yeah, I wish you had died instead of Adrian. Like, yeah. You suffocate me, blah, blah, blah. And
terrible,
it's like
terrible things that you would never say to your sister.
Right.
Probably.
And it's like, why would you believe that? But it's like, obviously, Adrian did such a good job of isolating her and like making Emily feel like she was not wanted in her life, you know? Right. Like, it's hard to get your story out there when you're in this situation. And so I feel so awful for both of them because like Emily is not willing to believe because Cecilia hasn't had the chance to tell her story yet.
Mm-hmm.
So Cecilia is freaking out, breaking down that, you know, Adrian is alive and trying to fucking sabotage all of her relationships still. And Sydney comes in to comfort her, and then Sydney goes fucking flying across the room, obviously struck very hard. And there's nobody else in the room that she can see, and so she's like, assumes that Cecilia freaked out and hit her. And James comes in, is like, I know you're going through some shit, but you can't hit my kid. And they leave the house. He's like, I better come back and you better be gone. And she's like, that is fucking it. So she, like, scatters a bunch of coffee grounds on the floor, all around her with a knife or something, right? She's like, if you want to get to me...
With her back to a wall so no one can sneak up behind her.
Exactly. She's like, fucking show yourself.
Yep.
And she then tries calling Adrian's cell, and she can hear it ringing in the house.
Yeah.
And terrifying. She goes up to the attic, and the phone is there by itself, and it just says surprise on the screen.
Ooh! Horrible.
And she she's coming out of the attic, and she's pretty sure that he's on the attic ladder, and so she spills paint on him, and she can see there's like a human figure there.
Yeah, like you can see a face, like a nose and like eyes, and yeah. And yeah. Then there's a struggle, and then he's at the kitchen sink, obviously, because there's paint in the sink that wasn't there. Like he's washing himself.
Yeah,
out.
To be invisible again.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a huge, like, horrible physical fight ensues with him just beating the absolute Christ out of her.
Mm-hmm.
She fights back and runs out of the house, and she gets an Uber to Adrian's house, and she finds, like, another prototype suit.
Okay. Also, the dog is still... Zeus, the dog is still there.
Yeah. I feel so bad for this fucking dog. The dog is fine.
If your owner is dead... You don't get to stay at your old owner's house.
Right, I don't know why nobody came for the... Well, we know why nobody came for the
fucking
dog.
I mean, yes, but like... I don't know. I'm just saying. Just in case you didn't think Adrian was big enough of a dick.
Nobody came to take care of his dog after
fucking...
his...
Fucking... Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, yeah, she finds this suit. It's an invisibility suit. Like, it's covered with cameras so that it can, like, change, like, the display on the suit to look like whatever is behind the suit, right? Essentially, to make you look invisible. And she grabs it, and she's, like, trying to run. She's trying to get out of the house, but then, like, she can tell Adrian's in the house, and so she hides in this closet, and she eventually escapes from the house, but she leaves the suit there. And I was like, girl, why did you do that? That was your evidence that he can be invisible. Anyway. So then she finally convinces Emily to meet up with her over dinner. She's like, look, we'll meet in a public place so I can't say anything nasty to you or whatever, and I'm going to tell you what's going on. And she starts laying out to Emily what's going on, and Emily appears to be just about to start listening when a huge knife appears in the air and slices Emily right across the throat and then apparently floats into Cecilia's hand while she's still just in shock. And the other diners start to notice, everybody's screaming. You know, Cecilia.
Terrifying.
Yeah, Cecilia is arrested, carried away, locked up, and she's screaming that Adrian did it, that, you know, her creepy ex is alive and he's invisible and he killed her sister and nobody's fucking listening to her, obviously. And as she goes down, because of course they sedate her like an invisible figure leans toward her and says, surprise again. Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, James is in the room while they're interrogating her, but she's terrified to say anything because she's, like, he obviously followed her into the locked ward where they put her, and she's like, he's listening to us.
Here's one of my issues with this movie. James should not be interrogating her. That is what we call a conflict of interest.
I was like, this is obviously just for, like, narrative compellingness, but yeah, he should not be the one interrogating her.
I think it would have been fine if he were, I don't know, on the other side of the mirror, but he absolutely... No.
Yeah, it was a weird choice. It was just some creative license, clearly.
Yeah.
But yeah, of course she sounds crazier than ever, being like, you can't see him, but he's in the room listening to us. You know, we see James, like, looking through at all corners of the room, like, maybe he'll be able to see what she's talking about. And then, of course, Tom comes and visits her, and it's like, wow, so unfortunate. Like, one of the conditions of your inheritance was that you not commit any crimes or be found mentally incompetent. Bummer. He's like, but you have a way out of this. And he's like, and when she's in the hospital, they reveal that she's pregnant and that it happened recently. And there's this super uncomfortable feeling of, like, one, obviously this guy was controlling her reproductive choices. Mm-hmm. Two, like, did he impregnate her somehow, like, after she escaped? Because the timeline is not clear. Like, it's a few weeks since she went to James's house, and they say that she would have been impregnated, like, in the last month or so. So it's just like... Ew.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. And so Tom is like, wow, big bummer that you're not entitled to this money and now you're going to rot in prison. He's like, but we can make this all go away if you have the baby and go back to him. Right? And that's where the shoe drops. Adrian is alive. Tom, of course, has been in on it all along.
Yeah, Tom's like, what, you really think that you could have taken birth control without him finding out? And I was like, fuck you, Tom.
Right? And it's, man, it is entirely possible that, like, Adrian abused Tom at some point, but, like, at this point, he's a co-conspirator.
Speaking of birth control, my alarm was going off. I'll take that later.
Like, at this point, Tom is in on it, and, like, maybe these dudes were abusive to each other. Like, maybe Tom became a crony to protect himself, but in any case, he is perpetuating what Adrian is inflicting on Cecilia, and I'm, like, totally, like... Right, I didn't really believe Tom, but I was like, maybe he's also a victim, but, like, now I'm like, fuck you. Mm-hmm. So she apparently flips out, shoves all his stuff off the desk, but she grabs his fancy gold pen and, like, tucks it into her outfit, and she waits until it rains.
Smart.
So the next time it rains, she gets in the shower in her cell and is basically like, you'll never take me alive, coppers, essentially. And Adrian, you're not going to have my baby. And so, content warning ahead for self-harm. She uses the pen that she stole to start, like, cutting into her wrist, making it look like she's going to take her own life. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Adrian, you know, pops out of whatever corner he's been hiding in order to attack her and stop her from taking her own life. And a guard gets involved. And he's got, like, a taser, and so there's this huge showdown, essentially, like, in the halls of this institution, and it's just fucking tragic because, like, she's running around screaming, like, he's invisible, like, you can't see him, he's gonna attack you, like, he's, right, because all these more and more, like, guards and cops and orderlies and stuff are running into the hall, seeing their downed coworkers, and, like, she's screaming at them what's happening, and, like, in the few seconds it takes for them to grasp this and believe it and start to act on it, like, Adrian has already attacked them, incapacitated them, you know, shot them with their own weapons.
Oh my God. It's like...
if this were like a more lighthearted, like, Invisible Man type hijinks, like, in a cartoon, it would be funny. But just, like, just over and over again, like, in the few seconds it takes for them to, like...
He takes down, like, a dozen guards.
Yes, because they, like, takes them time to react and to, like, start to think about how would I act if this were true, and by the time they, like, come around to it, they're already down.
All of the guards that run in after Adrian has taken down, like, two or three guards, and, like, three or more come running in, and they think that it's
Cecilia
that's doing this, but eventually Cecilia is, like, laying on the floor with her hands up, like, not doing anything, screaming what's happening. And, like, pieces are starting to get together, but, like, the second they realize what's going on, like...
Right, they're like, Adrian, so this bitch wants me to believe... Blam. Too late. Yeah. Ugh.
Yep.
So the reason she waited until it rained is because then she runs outside to try and get a car, and she can at least see his outline in the rain. He takes down more guards. He threatens to... Like, he finally gets a hold of her, and he basically tells her, like, get with the program or I'm going to kill Sydney. And so Cecilia takes a car and she calls James to get back to the house. She's like, I've escaped. like, Adrian is going to kill Sydney. And so, of course, Adrian and Cecilia get there first, and Adrian starts attacking Sydney. And then James arrives, but of course he also is still, like, getting on board the Fighting an Invisible Guy train. Mm-mm. And this is when Cecilia comes back with a fire extinguisher. And of course she can cover him with all this, oh man, I should know this since I'm going to be a firefighter in a week. I'll find out all the shit that's in the fire extinguisher. And she took a gun off a guard at the hospital and she shoots him and she takes off his mask and... Oh, wait a second. It's fucking Tom.
I knew it was fucking Tom.
The brother.
Like, when they were spending so much time about, like, her unmasking shit, I was like, it's fucking Tom, isn't it? It's fucking Tom. And then it was fucking Tom! And I was like, God damn it.
And so after this happens, the police raid Adrian's mansion, and they find Adrian, like, tied up in, like, a storeroom or a basement or something, claiming that this was all his insane brother's plot. And he's just been...
No.
Poor Adrian.
No.
Tied up in the basement this whole time.
Incorrect. No.
So, right, like, the police drop everything against Cecilia, but she's still like, yo, my crazy abusive ex got away with it. And James is like, I don't know, man, like, how would he be tied up in his own basement? And it bums me out because, yeah, like...
and Cecilia's literally like, if he could fake his own death, he can fake a kidnapping. He can
frame his brother. Yeah. And so Cecilia sets up, like, to meet up with Adrian at their old house for dinner, ostensibly to reconcile. And of course he does, and this is, I want to talk real quick about the cycle of abuse. He love bombs her. He shows up, right? This is part of it. Like, they put you, like, they put you on your back foot, and then they do something heinous to scare the shit out of you. And then if you are confident and capable enough to talk about leaving them, then they love bomb you. And so she comes over and he's just got this huge spread at this comically long table, and he's like, you know, I've missed you, I wasn't sure if you would want sushi or pasta or steak, I know those are all your favorites. And he's got this big fucking spread for her, and she fucking knows. She goes, steak. And he, you know, like, gets down, like, right to her level. You know, she's sitting in this chair and, you know, like, talking about how they're gonna reconcile or something, and he says, I forget exactly what he says, but he says, it should come as no surprise to you. And that's when she is, like, abso-fucking-lutely, you know. And so she starts crying, and she, like, goes into the other room ostensibly to, like, compose herself. And then we see...
Yeah, because she was crying, and she's like, I'm gonna go clean myself up. And he goes, of course, and smiles. I'm
yeah.
Like, you...
Slimy God. Motherfucker.
I literally... Okay. Can we just talk for a second about my other boyfriend here? Oliver Jackson Cohen has... maybe 10 minutes of screen time in this entire movie, maybe, where he's actually visible and not in his, like, invisible suit, and he does a bang-up fucking job of me hating him.
Ugh, yeah.
Like, just so good. And I just, like, if you've seen, have you watched Haunting, you haven't watched the second season yet, have you?
No.
Okay. Slight spoilers ahead. In... that Oliver Jackson Cohen plays essentially the same character, just with a Scottish accent, or an Irish accent. I don't know. I couldn't really tell. Sorry, UK listeners. It wasn't a great accent, so I couldn't tell where it was supposed to be from, in my defense. It wasn't the fact that I couldn't discern the two. It was just that it wasn't a great accent. I love you, Oliver. Please don't hate me for that. But he does such a good job at, like, literally, he's only on screen, right? Would you say, like, 10, 15 minutes, maybe?
Yeah.
In this whole, like, it's a 2 hour and, like, 5 minute movie.
Yeah, I get chills just thinking about him, like, looking her in the eye and saying surprise in that voice that he knows. Like, that's the shibboleth. Like, yeah, it's been me all along. What are you gonna do? And Cecilia is wearing a wire, and James is in a car outside, right? James is hoping that he's gonna incriminate himself, but when he does that, when he drops that surprise, like, Cecilia knows... that he wants her to know, but nobody else is ever going to find out
yeah.
that it was him.
And the other thing, too, is, like, Cecilia is on the opposite end of this already mentioned comically large table, and she goes, if we're going to do this, we have to be completely honest with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there anything you want to tell me?
Right?
And she's just like, just that I've missed you, and I know I've been through an ordeal right now with my brother, basically, is what mm-hmm. he says. And she's like, okay. All right.
I'm going to go clean myself up. And we see...
she's crying this whole conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. We see, just like what happened to Emily, we see his knife go up, and it looks like, from, like, the security cameras in his house, like, he slashes his own throat open.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple seconds later, Cecilia comes into the dining room, apparently from the bathroom, like freaking out, crying. Like, she goes, she's on camera, like crying, calling 911, freaking out. My boyfriend just killed himself. Oh my God. And of course, she like steps out of the view of the cameras and she's like, haha, motherfucking fucker. Because earlier in the movie, when she was in his mansion and she first found this invisibility suit, she stashed it in the closet instead of leaving with it. And so she obviously ducked into the other invisibility suit, went and cut his throat, took it off, like ran back into frame, you know, freaking out. And of course, James comes inside and he's like, girl, what did you do? And she's like, I don't know. He just, you know, I was in the bathroom and this is what happened. And James is looking at her like, and she's looking at him like, what are you going to fucking do about it?
And then he looks down and he sees the suit in her bag.
Yep.
The invisibility suit in her bag.
Yep, and the closing scene is, like, her... God, it's shot so well. Like, she's emerging from this... It's kind of, like, sunken into, like, this rugged California coastline.
Well, she's,
this
like...
This mansion.
But the last lines of the movie are, so what it, like, what did it look like to you? And James, like, after seeing the suit in her bag, goes, it looks like he killed himself.
Yeah. Like, and the very last frame is she's, like, emerging, and so just, like, behind her is just the sky over the sea, you know, and, like, the gates of this place that was her prison, and, like, nothing else. It's a very spare shot.
Yeah.
And she has got the suit in the bag, and she's got her dog by her side, and she's just got this look on her face like, okay, now everything can start and happen for me. So fucking good.
Zeus.
I know. Zeus made it. Ah, man, there was so much, right? There's, like, the what happens when someone who used to be being, who used to be abused by your abuser is now abetting them. There's, like, what do you do when, like, the good guy, like, the good ally dude in your life, like, doesn't believe you, right? Like, James doesn't really believe it. Like, James doesn't get fully on board until his own kid is harmed.
Yeah.
And it just reminded me of, like, the... Of, like, the, well, what if it was your daughter? What if it was your mother? What if it was your sister? What if it was your friend? And I used to not really understand, like, why that was a problem, because I'm like, I don't know, like, this is something that dudes don't really expect to happen to themselves, and so it makes sense to, like, kind of get them to empathize by being like, okay, but think about the women in your life.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized, like, we don't do that for any other crime.
Correct.
Even crimes that have, like, a component to them of, like, it happens more often to this group of people than that group of people. Like, when someone is murdered, nobody's like, imagine if it was, you know, your dad, your brother, your cousin, your son, your sister, your mother, whatever. Like, I don't know. And it just reminded me of that, because it literally takes something happening to his daughter for him to take it seriously and for him to fight back.
Yep.
And it just made me think of that. And I thought that was a nice touch that, like, right. And it's tough because the stuff that is happening to her is so insane. And, but he just doesn't believe her until it touches a woman in his life.
Yeah. I didn't think of it that way. But that is The Invisible Man.
And so good.
Before I dive into my story, we should talk a little bit about our sponsors.
This episode is presented by The Skin Store. For over 20 years, The Skin Store has been the number one destination for premium skincare, hair care, and beauty products. With over 8,000 different products from 300 different brands, The Skin Store has you covered for all of your hair, cosmetic, supplement, and of course, skincare needs. Find your favorite brands like EltaMD, New Face, Olaplex, and more all in one place with gifts with every purchase. Right now, The Skin Store is offering our listeners 20% off your next purchase by using the code POD, that's code P-O-D, for 20% off your next purchase of Skin Store at skinstore.com/pod.list. Skin Store, have the confidence to tackle the day ahead. Exclusions apply.
Thank you so much, Ellie. That was great. Yeah, I'm gonna have to get that Olaplex though from the Skin Store, because I hear it's really good. They have like some stuff for curly hair that I have been meaning to check out. And now I have fucking 20% off, which is pretty fucking great. So,
see, my hair doesn't do anything no matter what I put on it. I could wash it in mayonnaise and my hair would be like, that's cool. We're still not going to do anything.
I'm probably also, I also am in the market for a new moisturizer, so I'll probably check out for that.
That was so weird, real quick, when you were, like, posting on Facebook about, like, does anybody have any, oh no, does he listen?
Probably, but I don't care. We haven't dated in 16 years.
Sorry, dude, I'm gonna roast you a little bit. Abby's ex-boyfriend from high school, like, was making fun of her for looking, for sourcing, like,
literally on Facebook, all I did was, like, hey, does anyone have any good, like, moisturizer, like, recommendations? My skin's been really dry lately, because it was back when it was a little bit colder than it is now.
Yeah, and he was, like, I forget what he said, but he was just, like, acting like you were some kind of fucking maniac for, like, asking Facebook for skincare recommendations.
After 12 people had already commented their favorite moisturizers, by the way.
And I was like, there are so many moisturizers on the market, like, the entire influencer industry exists because companies are realizing, like, people don't trust ads, people trust recommendations from people that they have social or parasocial relationships with. So I was just like, can you imagine, like, being faced with an array, like, a dizzying array of products, but you're, like, not the kind of maniac who would fucking ask your friends for recommendations, and so you're just ashy instead? Anyway, that was very funny.
It was very fucking ridiculous. Like,
moisturize. Like, right? This is to my fellow white people. Fucking moisturize. This is why we look so goddamn old. It's that we think we're too good for moisturizer. This is why we age like milk. Put lotion on your face. Thank you. Skin store. Skin store is like, stop. We didn't sign up for this.
Skin store is like, no, no, no. We don't support you anymore. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? Stop.
No discounts for you.
Today's episode is also brought to you by our friends at Don't Look Under the Internet. Enjoy this promo as well and listen to them wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Don't Look Under the Internet, a place of fear, death, mystery,
and fun.
But not that much fun.
But a little fun. Sometimes we talk about chicken. But Demon Man does have a point. We mostly talk about internet mysteries, ARGs, and all sorts of spooks.
And other times we make funnies, while also talking about Lovecraft, cryptids, and the occult.
But not serial killers. That dead horse has been beaten to a pulp. We do, however, sacrifice an orphan to the internet after every episode.
But mostly, we laugh.
Of evil. We laugh laughs of evil.
I have never laughed evilly. It's not my nature. I don't think I can.
Listen to the podcast. Appease our masters.
My fiance?
Yes, fiance?
No, just fuck it. I'm gonna go collect some coagulated squirrel butt to feed to my children later. Oh, also, don't forget, stay.
Love it.
Damn, that show sounds good as hell.
Jack, can you do our intro? Anyway. Okay. Anyway, so I'm going to talk about the Invisible Boy, a.k.a. the Peter Pan possession, a.k.a. Cornelio Closa.
Real quick. Debbie's like, God damn it.
So many names. Yes.
Real quick, obviously the horror at the heart of the 2020 Invisible Man with Elizabeth Moss is fucking domestic violence.
Yes.
And Jack currently works at an organization that helps domestic violence survivors, and it's a cause that I have worked for and volunteered for since I was a little kid. When I was a Girl Scout, when I got my Gold Award, which is the Girl Scout equivalent of the Eagle Award, that was my, like, capstone project, was working with the local DV survivor shelter. Oh man, there are so many things I could say. Just like, I don't know, so many people, and this is something that disproportionately affects women, but I have also known men who have been in abusive relationships, and it's so scary because, like, people just write it off as like, haha, you're whipped, whatever. obviously members of the LGBT community, including trans and non-binary siblings, are also facing this, and it's just like, I don't know. It can happen to anybody, and it's so easy to feel like you are stupid or wrong or weak, or like you're imagining it, or there's no way you could ever live without them, and so you just have to deal with it. And it's part of the cycle of abuse for your abuser to be like, right, I see so many people talking about their abuse experiences, and it's just like, oh, well, he's great except for this. And it's like, that except is a deal breaker, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh, he's great, but he does this. No, he's not great. That's a big but, if you will. So I don't know. If you're in a situation like that, like, tell anyone. It's hard to leave. Most people take a lot of attempts to leave. I don't know. Make a plan. Tell anybody, because what abusers rely on is that you are too scared or doubting yourself, or that they have successfully isolated you. I promise you, no matter what they have done, no matter how they have walled off the rest of your life, there is somebody in your life who is willing to listen and who is willing to help you get out. So don't doubt yourself. It's really happening. Like, he's not doing it because he thinks it's funny. Like, you haven't been insufficiently clear on the fact that this is harmful and wrong, right? Like, so I've heard of so many stories of, like, people doing abusive stuff and then being like, oh, you just didn't get it, it's just a joke. Like, no. If you are scared, if you are unsure about yourself and your life and your safety, it's not a fucking joke. You haven't been insufficiently clear that it's not fucking funny. I don't know. I'm kind of rambling, but, like, I promise you there is someone out there who will help you get out of there, and you deserve it. And there is something better. Even being alone would be better. I know it seems scary, but, if you are in an abusive relationship, like, message us, we will connect you. Like, you got to get out of there. There is something better out there for you.
And if you feel comfortable, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE. You can also use the website thehotline.org. Or like Ellie said, reach out to one of us and we can call them for you. We can try to get you resources too. So, yeah.
Even if you just message us and say, hey, I really liked your Invisible Man episode, like, we'll know what you mean.
Yep, that's a good idea.
All right. This sounds a lot. I want to know what this kid was doing to be invisible.
You ready?
Yes. The Peter Pan possession, this is very evocative.
You ready?
Yes.
About Cornelio Closa, aka the Invisible Boy, aka the Peter Pan possession, today as my sort of the Invisible Man adjacent,
the lighthearted Invisible
much
Man,
much more lighthearted Invisible Man, like the watered, the kids bop version of the Invisible Man.
Not to make
light of that entire horrible situation, but when
the
I am
kids bop is just a funny idea.
Yes, when I am uncomfortable, I make jokes, and it's something I'm working on in therapy. But anyway,
wait, what kids bop are we on? I'm gonna look it up.
I don't know. Whatever WAP is, 30.
Did they really put that?
No, I don't think they did. But someone
never know, because like
someone parodied it, and it was like, "There's some doors in this house. There's some doors in this right. house."
And some of these parodies are like clever enough, and like there have been some weird ass songs on kids' pop albums that I'm like, "This is possible." Okay, so here we go. It was founded in 2001. It looks like the most recent one that Wikipedia will tell me about is Kids Bop 40, which came out in November of 2019.
I wasn't too far off. Okay, hey, you know who probably never heard a Kids Bop album is Cornelio Closa, who on one afternoon in 1951, as a 13-year-old, Cornelio Closa was walking home from his elementary school in Manila, the Philippines. All right. Along with this, can you stop?
Yeah, I'm good.
Are you quite finished?
Maybe.
Along with his friend Rudolfo. Okay, I thought you were going to do it one more time.
Like, did you lose your place? Are you checking?
No, I was like, are you going to do some Muppet bullshit? Okay. The two schoolboys cut across the field when suddenly Cornelio froze. Rudolfo turned to see his friend, pale with an expression of pure dread, with his eyes, quote, bulging out. It was clear that Cornelio was looking at something that Rudolfo couldn't see. And Rudolfo asked his friend what was wrong. And Cornelio told him that he could see a girl in a white dress with long blonde hair who was floating above the grass. And he was shocked that Rudolfo couldn't see it as well.
Don't like that.
Then Cornelio just blinked out of existence, leaving Rudolfo alone and dumbfounded in the field. This would be the start of Demon's Possession and the Teleporting Boy of Manila. Rudolfo did exactly what I would do in that situation. He ran the fuck home. To his surprise, Cornelio was already there in a daze.
Yeah. Yep.
That's not what I was expecting to happen.
I know.
I was like, and then a huge search was mounted for the weird flaxen-haired youth and disappeared. No, he's just like, damn, that was weird. Now I'm home anyways.
Yeah, he told Rudolfo that the girl in the white dress spoke to him without moving her lips. Hate that.
Hate that for you, sweaty.
And touched his hand, after which he had felt light, and then all of a sudden he was home. The two boys decided to keep the secret to themselves at this point. You know, I don't necessarily blame them. No adult is going to believe me when I say, I saw a weird lady, she talked to me without moving her lips, and she touched me, and then all of a sudden I was home. No.
This reminds me of being a kid and some friends and I at elementary school. Abby and I have known each other since we were two, but we went to different elementary schools. We met at church.
What could this possibly remind you of?
It reminds me of being a kid in elementary school, and my friends and I decided that the maintenance shed on the school grounds was haunted. I don't know. This just, right, I'm sure this is going to escalate beyond this is a creepy shed, but I don't know. I kind of sometimes miss being a little kid and, like, not really knowing what the rules of the universe are and coming up with weird shit like this, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay. So after, I don't even know. I'm just going to keep moving on.
Right, but just like, I saw a girl and she had long hair and she was floating and then she touched my hand and it felt weird and now I'm home. Sounds a lot like, there's a creepy shed and we think there's a ghost in there and we're going to write creepy stories about it. And then I went home.
I'm not saying Cornelio was making this up, but when I was 13, I was a little shit that probably would have made this up.
That's true. This kid is 13. I'm talking about being like half this kid's age. I don't know what this kid is up to. All right, carry on.
Okay, so after the instance in the field, Cornelio's personality changed completely. Cornelio, who was normally cheerful, became grumpy, sullen, and confrontational. He got into fights, skipped school, and started causing trouble. Okay, also, typical 13-year-old nonsense.
I was like, not to be all Scully says these are science bites, but that sounds like the kind of thing you get up to when you're in your early teens. Yeah.
I was like, okay, I was a terror at 13. Not as bad as I was at 16 when I was horrible and awful. So sorry, Mom and Dad. But still, not great. Anyway, he also continued to pull disappearing acts, which he would just vanish and pop up someplace else, often in view of terrified witnesses. One night he vanished in front of his family, and another moment he vanished in front of the entire school. Cornelio said that each time he disappeared, he had seen the girl in white. A school teacher of Emilio's said, where did I get Emilio?
Me and Emilio down by the ghost girl. Really quick. Okay. How many times, as a kid, did you wish you could just appear in front of the whole school? Like,
me and that Barney dancing moment that I talked about a few episodes back.
When I had to do that, like, play about Demeter with, like, an annoying popular girl who could, like, kind of get away with doing something really corny, but I was like, this is just gonna solidify my position at the bottom of, like, the social strata. I just, like, put my head down on the desk while she did, like, a weird song and dance about Demeter and Persephone, and I was like, kill me now.
Persephone, the one
That would go live with Hades for a while.
Yeah, with the pomegranate seeds. She's Demeter's daughter.
Who's Demeter?
She was like the goddess of the harvest, I think, and she was Persephone's mom. We had to do a play.
Pronounced Demeter. Is it Demeter?
I don't know. I'm not ancient Greek.
Demeter? I hardly know her.
But just like so many moments in high school where it's like, if I could disappear right now. And this kid had it on lock.
I'm sure Marvin will tell us if it's Demeter or Demeter, by the way.
I like to imagine, let's just say Demeter and Demeter a bunch of times and see if they can go, if they can like, in all, whichever one is wrong. Demeter, 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 Demeter. They're like not indulging us. I'm just sounding like a maniac.
Okay, I'd like to point out that I'm the one that pays them and you're just giving them more work for the hour.
No, because they're not going to do it. They're going to be like, fine, sound like a maniac. Saying, I don't know.
Sometimes they listen to me and they're just like, yeah, sure, boss, whatever you say.
Marvin, you're kind of like God in this respect where I'm like, fucking strike me down if I'm pronouncing Demeter wrong. Yikes. I don't know if you're going to do it until later.
Yikes. Marvin, write that down. Okay, I've always wanted to say that, and I just need to say it. I don't know what you're writing down. Look up Demeter versus Demeter. I don't know. Anyway.
They're like, you're on your own, bitches.
A cursory glance at Quora.com. Good place to find answers to questions such as this thing. A shout out to a woman named Sophia Jones who says she lives in Greece. And apparently in Greece, they would call her Dimitra. Like Demetra, Demetra, and the more English type way to say it would be Demeter. So I guess it's Demeter. So it's kind of like you're both right, you're both wrong, but also language is fluid. Nobody cares.
Like you have you literally have a laptop right in front of you. Okay. So a school teacher of Cornelio, I don't know why I wrote Emilio. Emilio! I wrote down Emilio probably because I'm a Spanish teacher. I don't know. A school teacher of Cornelio said, quote, he began to cause disturbances in school. The strange thing about these fights was that Cornelio, a small boy as he was, would take on three or four boys larger than himself, and together the larger boys could not hold him down. He had superhuman strength. A few days later, I called him to the front of the class to give the lesson. He went to the blackboard, stood there for a few moments, and then simply evaporated.
Goals.
I was terribly affected by these happenings in my class. I decided before I lost my mind completely, I should resign. I remember how the chain of... Wow. The teacher really resonates with me in this story.
Both of them, right? Like, I was asked to do a math problem in front of everybody, and I simply vanished. Yeah. Well, I as a teacher cannot fucking handle this, and I decided to quit before I completely lost my shit. Like, everybody here is behaving extremely relatably, except for mysterious ghost girl, whose motivations I cannot ascertain for the life of me.
The teacher continues, I remember how the chain of events made Cornelio laugh and laugh. It was a hideous kind of laugh. It didn't belong to a boy. In fact, it didn't belong to a human being. End Ooh, quote.
Don't like that.
Hate it.
Hate that for you.
It's just evaporate. Simply evaporated.
If I were asked to solve a problem involving integrals, I would simply evaporate, rip to other calculus students, but I'm different.
I don't know. Like, I am super skeptical about all this stuff. Like, I know that's not good for, like, a supernatural paranormal podcast to, like, be like, this is nonsense. But, like, that's just who I am as a person.
But, like, really?
Like, I'm picturing this 13-year-old kid, like, on the blackboard with chalk, like, look over there! And the whole class looks, and he just, like, runs away really fast out the door, and everyone's like, where did he go?
I am curious how this went down, because there's often, right... As ever, somewhere between the fucking Mulder version and the Scully version is usually the truth, and so I am curious what this must have actually looked like and how it must have actually gone down. This is weird as hell.
It is. Cornelio's parents also said that their son would seemingly devolve into an animalistic state as if possessed and would attack his own father.
What do you think about that?
I'm just picturing him, like, barking like a dog and, like, growling.
I know, like, animalistic how? Like, fucking dirty fighting tactics? Like,
is he foaming at the mouth?
Is he kicking him in the nuts?
Does he have, like, keys between his fingers like every woman in America does when she's walking to her car? Like, what's... Yeah. Feeling like a freak on the leash. Feeling like I have no release. Cornelio also... hid things so that no one could find them, smashed furniture and dishes, stole money, and even growled. On top of that, he would allegedly appear and disappear when all of the windows and doors were locked, and on other occasions, it was reported that he simply walked through solid objects like walls or doors as though they didn't exist.
I know teenagers are slippery, but really? Some of this stuff sounds like, okay, this could be the description of, like a pretty normal boy turning into a little shit. And some of this is like, all right, again, I know teenagers are slippery, but let's be real about this.
I'm laughing at this because, okay, sometimes these events were accompanied by an unpleasant odor as well. So he just crop dusted that.
Look over there. Bye. Like, who hasn't? Give me a fucking break. Local teenager is rude and farts. More at 10. What a slow news day.
Caught me farting by the counter. It wasn't me. Yeah, exactly.
Fucking nothing else was happening in Manila that year, I guess, which is pretty astonishing.
After a while of vanishing and almost instantly reappearing, Cornelio would now be gone for several hours or even days before reappearing again. Are you laughing at the pillow? Before reappearing again, claiming he had no memory about where he was. What, ma'am?
Fucking a mysterious odor. This kid is fucking crop dusting and trolling the hell out of everybody. And they're like, ghost?
Demon did. I know they're trying to like make the reference that like it's demon with like sulfur, but like,
but come on,
the crop dusting angle is just too funny not to bring up.
I'll just be in my cell laughing at this crop dusting troll ass child. If anybody needs me.
You know that if you laugh, I'm not going to be able to stop laughing. Okay. So Lester Sumrall, an author that wrote the book about his experience about the boy called, are you ready for this title? Alien Entities, A Look Behind the Door to the Spirit Realm, stated, quote, the parents told me that the whole family would be, sorry, I'm still laughing, stupid crap, don't say anything. Okay. Marvin, cut that. The parents told me that the whole...
It's gonna be like some kind of demented outtakes reel.
Get it together.
I'm just gonna hide behind my little piece of foam. Hope it doesn't fall over.
Get it together. Okay. The parents told me that the whole family would be in the front of their home. This is the pizza thing all over again. Okay. The parents told me that the whole family would be.
We can put this after the end theme song. Yeah, I've done that before. Okay.
The parents told me that the whole family would be in the front of their home and their children would be down on the floor. Sorry, okay. The parents told me that she's got on the pillow again. The parents. Yeah, put this at the end, Marvin, like after the fade out music. It's too good.
I can't. In case anybody's wondering how you can like someone for like 28, 29 years, it's because you're fucking stupid and you think farts are funny together. That's all it takes.
Correct. Okay. The parents told me that and the whole family would be in front of their home and their children would be down on the floor playing. Suddenly, with everybody looking, Cornelio would just disappear. The other children would start coughing and vomiting because of the stench he would leave behind. When he disappeared, he might have gone for 2 days or more, then he might just appear again in bed asleep. He would come in the house without using windows or doors. He would just suddenly be there, end quote. Oh, no.
Vomiting. God damn. What were they feeding this fucking kid? Jesus Christ.
Oh, I want to reread that. But, like, I also don't because it's funny. Okay. Cornelio seemed to be losing his mind from all the strange events surrounding him. He wasn't able to sleep. He didn't know what was happening. He had violent urges that didn't seem like they were coming from his own mind. In an interview, Cornelio said, quote, "Sleep for me was almost impossible. I was never left to myself. I would perspire profusely. It seemed as if my clothes were burning." Hate that. Nope. "Then if I would open my eyes, there would be a face of my friend looking at me, beckoning me to follow her. Every time her hands touched me, I would feel as if I were floating on air. Then I would be gone from home for days. I could not explain to my family just what was wrong. The girl made me promise I would not tell. I just felt tremendous heat in my body. Whenever anyone, that included my parents, spoke to me, I would really answer or shout. I did not want to snarl, but I could not help myself. If my father punished me, I would fight back. I knew I was displeasing him, but I did not seem to care. When no one bothered with me in the house, I would just sit and wait. I did not know why, but I was just there, waiting for the girl. Many times we would go to the movies, and I knew no one could see us. When I was with her, I didn't feel exhausted or hungry. I kept on seeing the girl, and I was able to go out with her despite the closed doors. Sometimes I would be gone as long as 3 days, although I had no knowledge of my own how long I had been away." End quote. Cornelio was, of course, brought to psychologists, doctors, mental health experts, but nobody was able to figure out what was wrong. His parents made the difficult decision to send him to a welfare center, citing that that he was just beyond what they could do as parents. Like, his case was just out of their hands. Mm-hmm. At the welfare center, Cornelio acted out so much and so out of control that he was sent home. His parents then tried to send him to a juvenile correction facility, and once again, he was sent home.
Damn, what do you do then?
I know. Of these events, Cornelio said, quote, "We baffled the people at the hospital. The doctors were kind, but while they talked to me about being a good boy, I don't think I was listening. Next, father brought me to the Correctional Institute for Juvenile Delinquents. Here, I immediately caused trouble. I fought everyone, even the officials. Because of my violent temper, I was often roped to my bed. Finally, I was returned to my home. My parents seemed to have resigned themselves to living with a monster." End quote. This continued for another year, intensifying the entire time before the closest reached out for some religious help. A local pastor had claimed to have heard the devil's voice come out of Cornelio. Sumral, the guy that wrote that book, invited Cornelio to church, and it was apparent that Cornelio was highly uncomfortable upon entering the building. Same, though. Later, he'd explained that he saw the girl in the vestibule, but instead of being a beautiful girl in a white dress, her features were twisted and horrific. He says, "The girl made her appearance just outside the church door. She looked different, not pretty anymore. She looked ugly. When she motioned to me, I hid my face. I looked again, and she had transformed into something positively horrible, and she did not look like a girl or a woman. I'm not a girl. I get a woman."
Just a creepy ghost. It's
the Britney Spears music video. Yeah. This description convinced Sumral that the girl was actually a demon in disguise. "You're the devil in disguise. Oh, yes, you are. Devil in disguise. Sumral gave,
yes, you are."
Sumral gave Cornelio an exorcism on the spot. Right there. He was just prepared. Ready to go.
Wow, didn't even call the bishop. He was like...
You don't need to call the Pope. We don't need to call the Bishop. After this, Cornelio did not have any visits from the girl or it, whatever it was. I'm doing air quotes around it. You can't see because it's a podcast, but that's what I'm doing. Cornelio had thought the girl in white was an angel until he saw her true self in the church that day. In 1965, Cornelio gave a rare interview with two people from United Press International, and it is here where the case came out to the public. There have been many skeptics of the case, but Sumral remains adamant that it really happened. He says, quote, "The story of the invisible boy is true. It is a story to which I was intimately related. I hired people to check out the validity of this story, including policemen." Man, I mean, if you can't trust the police, really, who?
Womp, womp.
Yeah. Including policemen who signed affidavits about it. Fun fact, when I was a kid, I thought it was Act of David. Like, I didn't understand. I, like, could not, like, figure out that it was just one word with an F, and I just thought it was Acts of David.
I still have...
And I was like, who the fuck is David?
I still get people... I have to deal with affidavits a lot in my current job, and I still people... I see people spell it affidavit, so...
Yeah, I'm not alone. We investigated the whole matter very carefully. We didn't want the slightest possibility of falsehood or misrepresentation in it. It is surely one of the most well-documented cases in our files, and interesting to note that a religious leader, Reverend H.A. Baker, traveled from the United States to the Philippines to verify the facts of this case. They were unbelievable to him, but after talking to all of those involved in establishing the facts, he wrote to me and said, quote, "Unbeknown to you, I visited the Philippines. I contacted Cornelio, the school teacher, the parents, and their neighbors. I discovered that it is absolutely true," end quote. So my sources for this are the "And That's Why We Drink" podcast episode number 178. This is where I heard about the Invisible Boy for the first time, but I didn't actually listen to their podcast for these notes, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then I found an article on mysteriousuniverse.org, and I also watched on YouTube, they have the documentary that Lester Sumrall, who wrote that book, he made like a half hour documentary about this case, and I also watched that on YouTube.
Huh.
So that is the case of the Invisible Boy. What do we think?
I don't... I, like, obviously there is, like, this kid was acting up and acting out, and, like, this kind of mythology about it emerged somehow, but I don't quite understand connecting the dots between, like, this kid acting out and him being able to, like, walk through walls and do all this kind of creepy shit.
Yeah. Also, like, where is the movie about this?
Right?
Where is it?
What? Okay, besides Act of David, can you remember any other funny things that you got, like, mixed up or wrong or mispronounced as a kid? Because Beverly Cleary recently passed away. And I was telling Jack about how my mom was reading...
other than that, I was a perfect child.
Perfect child.
Perfect speech.
My
no other mistakes in my entire life. Yes.
But my mom would read out loud. My mom, like, would practice reading by reading out loud to her mom, like, while Graham was, like, making dinner or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she was reading a Beverly Cleary book, and she got to a part about Beatrice, but she had never seen the name Beatrice in print. And so she was like... Then Beet Rice said, and Graham was like, "Beet Rice?" So they fucking see that.
That's so good.
I was just like, "Oh, Beatrice." So my mom and I still talk about, like, "Oh yeah, those books with Ramona and Beet Rice." I, for the longest time, this is probably the weirdest one. Well, I would get Al Pacino and Al Capone mixed up.
Rasputin and
Nostradamus, apparently. And I got...
That's on tape, by the way, in the Queers for Fears catalog.
I got Sigmund Freud mixed up with Siegfried and Roy. And then one of them got attacked by a tiger, and I was like, "Isn't he a psychologist?" And that was when I sorted it out, I think.
Oh, wow, that was recent.
Not an AP Psych, but yeah, in the fucking news. And I was like, "Wait, this must be a different person..." Than, yeah, the 19th century psychoanalyst that I learned about in AP Psych.
Oh boy, yeah. I can't think of any right now. I am positive that I had about 1 bajillion approximately. Also, a lot of mistaken lyrics in my life.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's another one. In that Meatloaf song where he says, like, "I want you," I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but he's like, "I want you, I need you, but there ain't no way I'm ever going to love you. But don't be sad, because 2 out of 3 ain't bad." I thought he was saying, "But don't be sad, I'm still a freak in bed."
Wow, that was way off.
Yeah, I mean...
That's really funny. I don't think you have similar sentiment. Have you talked about that?
I don't know. Maybe I was keeping that one. I was keeping that one in the vault.
We just say so much stuff on here, I just can't, like... possibly keep track of all the nonsense that comes out of my mouth. I'm really trying to think.
I think those are my all-time favorites.
Oh, I got one. Got a good one. Craig, you're gonna hate this one.
She's like adjusting the microphone to better recount the scene of hers.
Craig's like, "What the fuck
What's
did I
happening?
Do? It's martial arts related, that's why." So, okay.
She's doing the beleaguered, like, hand in front of the eyes thing.
But... I'm debating if I want to admit this to anybody. I made a promise with 12-year-old me that we would never talk about it again, and it's a lot for me, okay? So, I was in martial arts. I earned my black belt. When you are a higher belt, it becomes your responsibility to lead warm-ups. Well, at least at my particular martial arts location, that's how it works. And so I was about like a brown belt, which is pretty high up there, and they asked me to lead the exercises, and it was my first time and also my last, because
I don't know this one.
You're like, what the fuck is happening?
Your black belt pretty young, so this would have been when you were like maybe right 11 13,
12 yeah. So okay. So warm-ups were like 15 minutes. We did like 100 jumping jacks. We did like 100 crunches. We did some push-ups. We did all this stuff. We did a lot of shit. Best shape of my life was when I was like 14 years old. But okay. So we go into child's pose. I'm trying to remember like the order of this. And then we would go into some stretches where like you lean toward like one leg and one leg is out straight, and then we would switch sides, and then we would sit down and sort of like not a splits position, because my god, who can do that? Probably somebody out there listening, right? So then you would, and then you would like do the thing where like one hand goes over your head,
mm-hmm. and stretch towards one leg, yeah, you got your toes,
and mm-hmm. you pull your toes, and then you do the other one, and then you're supposed to say tap it out where it hurts. That's what you're supposed to say. So, like, right, like, you're like this, and then you're supposed to just, like, tap on, like, your hand, like, your femur and, like, your hamstrings to kind of, like, loosen the muscles. I don't know. What 13-year-old me says was tap your private parts, because everyone had said it.
No!
I know. Everyone had said it so fast. Tap it out where it hurts. Like, they had said it so fast, and that's, like, literally what my parents called genitals when I was growing up. Yes. They called them private parts. They did not call them penis and vagina. I was a child raised in the 90s.
Same.
Bless them, but private. They're just private parts. That's it. It was like, don't want anyone near your private parts, and I was like, so, like, my diary? I don't know what that means. Anyway, so I, to a group of children, said, tap your private parts instead of tap it out where it hurts.
No!
And that is another very embarrassing moment. My partner doesn't know that story either.
And I don't know that story.
My partner also didn't know the Barney story. And as soon as he came home from listening to that, he was like, why didn't you ever tell me about the Barney story? That explains so much about you. That's where your trauma started, isn't it? And I was just like cracking up because he was just being so dramatic about this Barney story. So I know he's going to be like, oh my God, how are you a teacher? Like, how do you want to be in front of people every day after all these terrible things have happened to you?
See, I think it makes sense. You learned that you can fuck up in front of a group of people, and if you don't take yourself too seriously, you can get up in front of a group of people again.
Well, that's what you need to do, dear listener, is if you don't want to do something in front of people and you have to do it, you just mess it up completely so that you're never asked to do it again. Because guess what? I was never asked to lead exercises or warm-ups ever again.
No. Oh, no. Bro.
Tap out your private parts, and I'm literally like doing like the suck it motion on my crotch.
Karate chopping in the labia
fucking
area.
Fucking A, dude. Oh, wow, no. I can't believe I've never told anyone that story before.
No,
and
you
I've
haven't.
Just recorded it for anyone to listen to.
That's
amazing. Christ.
Here, I thought it was embarrassing when I answered like a question in like the children's hour at church with, I have Easter socks.
That's typical kid shit.
I was like the worst though. When we, right, because like Abby and I went to the same church. We were always called up for like children's time or whatever, and I was always like spouting some bullshit. I did not shake that habit until I was in high school. Like, and not everybody always wants to hear your weird anecdotes about your cool socks.
Still that is very true, actually. You did do that a lot for a long time, and I was like, is she good? Like,
I got it from my dad. He's always just, I don't know.
That's very true, yeah. Actually. Lovely person, but also, yes, that is true. He does do that sometimes, yeah.
I actually recently read an advice column that was, like, an extreme version of this, mm-hmm. and it was like, what do I do? My wife tells the same stories over and over again. I have said something to her. Her friends have said something to her. Her kids have said something to her.
That's just who she is. Just like...
like, she knows that these people have heard this story before, but she tells it over and over again because she thinks if it was funny the first time, it'll continue to be funny. And yeah, the advice from the columnist was like... love it or list it, basically. This is who your wife is. She's obviously not interested in changing.
I love that. Also... oh my god, I read an Am I the Asshole the other day. Marvin, delete this if it's not funny, because we've been talking for a really long time. But I read an Am I the Asshole the other day that was like, am I the asshole for not letting my boyfriend's kids into my apartment?
Yes, I read that one.
And I was like, it's not gonna work, sis. It's just not gonna work. Like, clearly, he has kids and you don't like kids.
They're a package deal, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Like, they're not going to magically, like, what are you going to do? Like, just not live together until they're, like, 18, so they're not going to, like, touch everything with their sticky little hands? Like, that's not, you two just aren't a good match. Love it or list it.
Right, like, it's not.
So many of these Am I the Assholes can just be love it or list it. That's it.
It's, yeah, it's, like, it's interesting because the consensus on Twitter was, like, she's not the asshole, but, like, the consensus on Reddit was that everybody, it was an everybody sucks. Because, like, right, obviously you should have drawn these boundaries beforehand, and, like, he shouldn't be, like, you should have obviously set up, like, some kind of structure with your relationship vis-a-vis the kids before he just started, bringing them over without asking. But also, like, what are you doing dating a guy with kids if you're not ever going to let them in the house? Oh, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, we love to judge people on the internet.
It's not. That's
what it comes down to.
A lot of the Am I the Asshole posts are boundary-based, and a lot of them I usually side with, no, you're not the asshole, you are allowed to draw that boundary in your life. This one, I was like, you're kind of an asshole for not letting his fucking kids come over. Like,
well, or at the very least, you're kind of an asshole for expecting to, like, forever be able to, like, only have his kids around you when it's convenient and not in your own home. Like, don't date a guy with kids if you never want kids in your house.
I think that's fair. Like, no, but I'm not going to judge you. If you don't want kids and someone has kids and that's a deal breaker for you, like, I get it.
I still can't stop thinking about lemon chicken, lemon cake, Jimmy John's bride. Damn.
And her father-in-law called her a bitch. And her, wait, I don't think we said... did we only say that on a Patreon episode? I think we only...
We might have done.
Only... so you got to sign up for Patreon is what I'm saying.
He's like, we're not going to tell you.
We're not going to tell you. You got to find that information out on your own. Go to the $1 tier level and you'll figure it out.
Long story short.
No, don't even give them that. We got to end it here. They got to become Patreons. I need 15 Patreon supporters by June 25th.
Well, here... no, here's the teaser.
Just give the entire story away. Oh my god.
All right, fine. Marvin, you can cut that part. I was going to say our pontificating about it is what you get with your cash money buck dollars.
Cash money buck dollars is now added to this podcast lexicon. Thank you so much.
How many cash money buck dollars for a true crime bruv t-shirt? Ooh. Is a sentence I would not have thought of a year ago.
That is what we're deciding now. We are literally just had a group chat about creating t-shirts
with Kevin. Shout out to Kevin. If Woo-hoo. You have a side hustle, we will promote you.
Kevin, who after we were like, we don't know anyone with alliterative names, was like, y'all,
hello.
Kevin, literally one of our Patreon supporters, was like, one of my dearest guys
in sixth grade is like, yellow,
hello. Yeah, anyway, thank you
for listening.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. I had a lot of fun. I love recording in person. It's so much better.
This is nice.
We, like, jive so much better when we're not, like, looking at each other through a computer screen, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Become a Patreon supporter and stay queer.
Stay queer. Stay spooky.
Don't crop dust unless you absolutely have to.
We've all been there. Sometimes it's necessary.
I get it. I'm a teacher. I do it all the time.
I knew it.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye. You ever just really need a drink and you go to your drink and it's empty?
There's no more drink?
That's literally what just happened to me.
I can top up your water if you want. Oh, you got cider. This bitch is ready.